Welcome to Grounded with Earth Optics. My name is Gunnar Budvars, and I'm one of your co-hosts. I'm joined today by Piper Smith, my other lovely co-host. Piper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I can't complain. It's a Monday that we're recording this, but
How are you doing? Because you're in Florida. How are you doing post-Helene?
I am in Florida, and I can say that hurricanes suck, and I think everybody in the Southeast United States is, like, on par with that sentiment this week. But we're doing good. We were mostly spared some mild flooding. We're pretty far south, so that's the good news.
That is good to hear. Yeah, I've over the weekend I was seeing a lot of the footage coming in from Florida, from all over the Southeast. It was pretty devastating to see. So our thoughts and prayers are out there for everybody who's been affected by that. And if you have any way to help out, please do help out. There's a lot of people in need. Moving on to brighter pastures, as we could say. We are joined by Mitch Clark from Maple Hill Creamery today. Mitch Clark, could you please introduce yourself and thank you for being on?
Yeah, my name is Mitch. I'm with Maple Hill Creamery. I've been here about 6 or 7 years right now, and we've had a project we've been working on with the Earth Gunnar and the Earth Optics team for, I don't know, when do we start? Officially 6 months ago, something like that? Or is it even that long? No, it was like 3 months ago. So
I first met you over a year ago, actually, and I could almost say this was like the start of my professional career, because this was when I was still an intern, you know, working directly with our CEO Lars. And so I've known you for about a year now, and we've been working on this USDA Climate Smart Commodity project that we're doing the MRV for you guys, Maple Hill Creamery. So yeah, we've been talking for a little bit now, and we're out there sampling, which is super, super exciting. But before we get on to the USDA projects, I do want to talk about that a bit. Who or what is Maple Hill Creamery?
Yeah, Maple Hill is, we like to say we're America's original 100% grass-fed organic dairy brand. We've been around since 2009. We were founded by a gentleman named Tim Joseph, and he was a dairy farmer. He was with Organic Valley at the time. Well, actually, he was a conventional dairy farmer, and he transitioned from conventional to organic, and he'd always kind of been interested in grass-fed dairy. He likes to say he wanted to be as close to the sun, you know, when he was feeding as close to the sun as possible, take out as many steps in the process. And essentially, I mean, cows are ruminants. They're meant to eat grass. And when he went to do his transition, when you transition from conventional to organic dairy, you have to practice organically for a year before you're organic, but you're getting paid conventional prices, and it's really difficult. So he actually, part of the reason he did it was financial, and he saw a lot of benefits. And, you know, shortly after he started, so the whole time he was organic, he was shipping his grass-fed. And shortly after that, he was always an entrepreneur, and he started making yogurt. And honestly, one thing led to another, and here we are today. But, you know, today you can find Maple Hill at, I think it's like 7,500 stores across the country. You know, we do really well at like Whole Foods, Sprouts, Natural Grocers, like incredibly well at stores like that. We're also doing really well at a lot of conventional retailers, Walmart, Publix, Kroger, stuff like that. We have 130 farms as of today. We're running a lot of farms. The business is really growing a lot. But historically, we're all in upstate New York, and we've recently expanded into Pennsylvania. Where you've grown our milkshake. But yeah, so everything that we do is 100% grass-fed organic. And with that being all we do, we're kind of experts on how to do it, how to make it work.
That's awesome. I know it was 8 or 9 months ago when I was like, all right, I've been talking to these guys at Maple Hill for a few months now, but I still have not tried any of their products. And I found that your products are actually at the Natural Grocers in Rochester, Minnesota, where I live. So I've become a really big fan of your strawberry. Is it pronounced kefir? I still don't know how to pronounce it, but it tastes really, really good.
My boss's name is Jim, and I always thought it was kefir, and he was always saying kefir. And I was like, Jim, you're wrong. Actually, I looked it up, and he was right. So I think it's kefir is how you say it. They're great. It's a great product. We do a good job with it.
That's good. No, that's tremendous.
One thing you'll find with all of our products is they're, you know, super clean. We're not going to have add anything to it. Honestly, most of, you know, we have kefir, so we have a Greek yogurt, a cream on top yogurt, and we sell a ton of milk. But the vast majority of what we sell isn't actually the flavored stuff. It's all just, you know, the plain stuff, right? So, you know, people are looking for a clean, like, clean label product, and we meet that, and our milk is as clean, as pure as it gets.
Coincidentally, not in preparation for this recording, but I have had Maple Hill on our dining room table. I have four young boys. I am not a milk drinker myself, but oh my gosh, do they go through a gallon like there's nothing to it. So it's been Maple Hill for us.
I like it. That's great to hear.
Now, Mitch, what makes grass-fed dairy important as opposed to just, you know, conventional dairy? Because we've had James Clement, our SVP of Grass and Rangeland, on to talk a little bit about grass-fed beef, but let's turn the tables to dairy.
Yeah, you know, what we'd say is we're kind of the whole total package. So it's better for the land, better for the animals, better for farmers, we believe, and better for you, better for people. So better for the land. You know, our model is about as regenerative as it can get. We're using the term regenerative agriculture more and more. Somebody's listening to this podcast, they're probably familiar with the term. And a lot of it, you know, there's a number of, you know, people might have five or six different principles behind that. And, you know, you might hear a first step on somebody's sustainable journey talking about cover crops or something like that. But the Maple Hill model goes well beyond any of that, right? We have perennial pastures and, you know, perennial hayland. So this is land that's never being tilled, right? We're intentionally rotationally grazing our cattle through paddocks. And, you know, you're really developing soil fertility when you're doing that. And we have I'm gonna come back to that, but we actually have some of the foremost experts who are, you know, almost full-time with Maple Hill, Paul and Phyllis Van Amberg at Dharma Lee Farm. They were the first farm to join our founder, Tim Joseph. They've been grass-fed, I'm going to say it wrong, like 12, 13, no, 14, 15 years, almost since we started. But really, it becomes some of the foremost experts on how to do grass-fed organic dairy well. So, I mean, we're teaching all of our farms these practices, and everything we do is certified as well. We've developed a certification called Organic Plus Trust. But anyways, it's better for the land, right? So, like, increased soil fertility, as regenerative as it can get. Animals, cows are ruminants, right? Cows are meant to eat grass. Like, that's how they were developed over time. And so with that being all that they're eating, it's kind of what they're meant to do. So our cows on a per cow basis are going to produce a lot less milk than a conventional model or an organic. I mean, it might be, you know, versus conventional, some of the super high output ones, we might be a third, a quarter of what they're producing. But for us, it's not really about milk production on a given day or in a given year. It's, you know, the longevity of that cow and the health of it. And when you're not necessarily pushing that cow for super high production, you're feeding them what they're designed to eat, they're going to live a much longer life. They're going to be less stressed. You know, our cows, a lot of them are living 10 to 12 years. Whereas in a conventional model, you might get under two lactations. So our cows live significantly long, better for the animals, like I was saying, better for the land, better for the animal, next, better for the farmers. So our model, like you really, the certification, this Organic Plus Trust that all of our farms are certified under, that certifies that they're only eating grass, was developed by our founder, Tim Joseph, in partnership with Organic Valley and others within the industry. It's administered by a company called Earth Claims, who does the Global Animal Partnership for Whole Foods. With that, though, you're not going to have a massive farm. Like, these cows can only travel so, like, cows can only walk so far, right? And if they have to graze every day, they have to be close to the barn. And if you have a 2,000-cow dairy, they're not going to be able to walk far enough and get back to the barn. Mm-hmm. So all of our network, I mean, our average herd size is, like, 50 cows, which is incredibly small in dairy. And we're paying... If I talked about like the yield per cow is a lot lower, we're paying a lot more than almost anybody else at scale within the industry. That's not like I haven't gone out and verified what everybody else is paying, but you know, I've been in the industry a while and I'm pretty sure we're paying more than anybody else at any reasonable scale. And you kind of have to make this model work. But you know, we found that we've developed a model that really does work for us and is working for our farmers. And these are family scale farms. We're going to get into the Climate Smart Commodities program. But with that, you have to do some reporting on small and underserved farmers. Like all of our farmers fit the mold of USDA. USDA defines as small and underserved. Just kind of cool, I think. So again, better for the land, better for the animals, better for farmers. And lastly, and this is what's most important to a lot of people, is it's better for you, better for people. So it's a better, I'm going to say it wrong. I'm the supply chain person, not the scientist, but it's got a higher CLAs, which is a better fat, and it's got a a significant, any grass fed in general is going to have a better ratio of omega 3s to omega 6s. Am I saying that right? I think. It's like one of the bigger things. And so, and then also we would argue more nutrient dense as well. So we've done some studies with a company, I think it was Audacious, where they, we did it like 5-7 years ago. And we did it again last year, I think, where they tested our milk and they went out and they tested a bunch of other companies' milk. And they found that our products were more nutrient dense. I don't have the exact results in front of me there, but we've done testing behind. So again, lastly, better for the land, animals, farmers, and you is what we'd like to talk about.
Mitch, did you say the average herd size was about 50?
50 cows, yeah. Which,
yeah.
No, if you know much about dairy, it's in, it's really small. I mean, these are truly family scale farms. I mean, you go on the farm and you'll, you know, you go meet with where the farmer might be, and they're the one who's milking the cows. You know, they, you know, might get some help from their family, and some people might have a farmhand, but it's mostly just these people. They live on the farms, and it's cool too because they really care about their animals. You know, it's not they snacking other forms of agriculture. They all have their fed, but you know, we're proud of what we're able to do.
Yeah, the reason I ask, I take off my like Earth Optics hat and put on my back to my like consumer hat. But I think you wonder when you look at the box on my table. I think Daisy's on there. There's a cow, but you always wonder like, is it really small family farms or is it just one small family farm? You know, represented here. And so that statistic was particularly interesting to me. Like, no, the average across the herd size is 50.
Yeah, and one thing we've talked a lot about, or I talk about with our farm. So, you know, you may have on network, I don't know, 5, 6, 7,000 cows. I don't have the map. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. But you have farms that size that are producing as much net milk as these 130 farms in our network. And at the end of the year, it's going to be 140 with growth and even more following you. But with that, these small farms, like it, instead of buying all that milk from one large farm, this supports 130 families, right? Like legitimately families. It enables them to live this lifestyle. And then beyond that, most of our farms are buying equipment or bedding or whatever. My farms don't have as many inputs as other or since they're just, you know, growing grass as other people, but they're buying within their local communities. So, I mean, that's like how you support and redevelop rural communities as well. So there's multiple benefits there.
Definitely. So you mentioned two of the different farms that are a part of Maple Hill, and they were both going from conventional to regenerative. Is that the case for a lot of the farmers, if not all of them, but that are a part of Maple Hill? And then what does that transition look like? Because it certainly makes sense in a theoretical or ecological sense, but like, it sounds like in some cases it doesn't necessarily make business sense, but it's kind of the right thing to do.
Well, it does make business sense for them too, but I can talk more about that. But we, as far as farms coming to Maple Hill, we have the full gambit. I would say the vast majority of our farms are organic farms that transition to grass fed, right? So organic farms are already grazing, right? There's a grazing requirement. Ours goes much beyond that, but they're already familiar with, you know, having their cows on pasture. So it's an easier transition. We get farms from conventional. I'll talk about the transition from each of those. We occasionally have farms that are already grass-fed and maybe within another market that transition to Maple Hill. We also have new startups, like people who haven't dairied or don't own a dairy and maybe they like grew up on a dairy that want to get back into dairy who have joined us. So it's a little bit of everything. Is what we're seeing now. If you're conventional, let's say you're conventional, your land's conventional, it's 3 years on the land, right? So you have to practice that on organically. You essentially have to become organic on that land for 3 years to go from, and then for the cows, it's to go from, I'll talk about transitioning to organic first because we are organic as well. So it's 3 years on the land. It's a year on the cows. So you have to practice, and feed the cows only organic feed for a year. And then to go to grass fed, it's 90 days. So after you're already organic, if that makes sense.
Okay, trick question, or maybe it's not. Maybe I could Google it. But as someone who doesn't have snow down here in Florida, how do you grass feed a cow in the winter? What does that look like?
That's a great question. So farms are going to, it's going to be grass pay Baelish. So they're spending the growing season. I'm going to say it wrong. It's like most of their feed intake has to come from pastures, right? There's like a certain percentage, and then we have third-party auditors who go out and verify this on our farms. It has to come from cows, not like eating grass, but like eating grass in a pasture, right? But then all winter long, our farms are also growing feed, right? Our president, Jim Howe, he always likes to say our farmers are not just, you know, it's more like they're grass farmers than anything else than cows. But so they're growing feed all summer long, and then they're to store it to get them through the winter. So our cows are going outside in the winter still. They always have outdoor access. But when I mentioned New York and Pennsylvania, I don't know if you guys have much time in the winter. There's no rain. Yeah, they're still eating grass, hay, baleage through the winter. It's just the farmers have prepared that throughout the summer, spring and summer and fall to make sure they can get through the winters. Does that make sense, Piper?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've heard that from the beef side too, at least that statement that they are grass farmers more than anything else.
And one thing I'd say too, where you get like, well, you know, other parts of the country, and there's advantages to every model, like I said. But, you know, would it be better if they're out in the pasture all year round in a different part of the country? And again, there's advantages to that. But one of the things too is when you give the land a chance to rest, right? So you have everything in that's like all that organic matter, the grass, you know, maybe leaves falling off a tree or whatever it might be, that's decomposing over the winter. And that's really also, in another sense, feeding the soil as well. So when you get back to the spring, when those cows go out on pasture, that grass is so nutritious. So essentially, you test our milk in the spring, it's like it's going to be it's nutrient dense year round, but it's the most nutrient dense in the spring. Also, that's that grass that the farmers are harvesting in the spring that isn't going to feed the cows right away, but that they're going to feed in the winter is supported by that as well.
Definitely. That's super insightful. That makes me think of, because I'm up in Minnesota where, you know, I experienced similar winters to what you guys do out east, but it's amazing how little life there's going on in the winter in kind of the North Country. But at the same time, between that snowpack and the surface of the ground itself, there's actually an incredibly large ecosystem, or at least like substantial ecosystem going on. To once that snow does melt off, it kickstarts that whole system into firing back up and gearing up towards spring. Before we kind of jump over to the USDA program that you guys are working on, what are the products that Maple Hill offers? And then you mentioned a little bit kind of the customer base, but what sort of customers do you see, and why are people choosing these products from Maple Hill as opposed to anything else?
Yeah, so we have whole and 2% milk. We actually just updated our packaging. I don't know if you guys have seen that. I'll show you. But we have, the light's shining weird. You can't see it. There you go. But it's, you know, this is what we've had for like 6 or 7 years now.
Yes.
And then now we're updating to, we're saying it's growing a little bit more, but if you can find us, that's what the packaging milk looks like. So we have whole and 2% milk. And honestly, a good chunk percentage of our sales is fluid milk. That's what a lot of people get introduced to on the brand. We have my favorite product we make is our plain, actually, it's probably our butter. Our butter is an incredible product. We want to sell it more, but honestly, most of our products that we sell are full fat. So I don't know if you guys know much about dairy supply chain, but you're making butter with cream, and when you sell like a 2% milk, you're going to have a little bit of cream left over and use that to make the butter. But with that, our butter, our two butter, what is it? It's just like a half pound of butter, but it's salted and unsalted, is only available at Whole Foods. And that's just because we don't have more supply to go beyond that. And we're selling a lot there too. But I'd say that's my favorite product. And then we also have our plain Greek yogurt is incredible. Like we until recently, we didn't have great distribution on it. We've recently gotten a lot more distribution. You can find this at a lot of natural organic stores. Those ones were at a lot of Whole Foods. We recently got introduced to Publix there. We're doing well there, but our plain Greek is incredible. It's a phenomenal product. I think the only ingredients are just like milk and cultures, right? And a lot of yogurts you see aren't that. So we have a vanilla one as well. We do a cream on top yogurt that's plain and vanilla. And then we have kefir. We do plain. vanilla and strawberry, and I think that's it. It's 11 SKUs is all. We, you know, eventually we will launch more SKUs, but, you know, we're trying to keep it simple for right now and focus on what we're doing and just doing more of it. What was the other question you asked, Gunnar?
What was the other part of it? I think it was just what does your customer base look like? And then how do you kind of market to customers, whether it's, you know, you mentioned some of the retail side, but is there any, you know, direct to consumer aspects to it?
Yeah, it's all retail. Everything we do is retail. And honestly, the last 3 years, we've hardly spent anything on marketing. You know, we've like in the 15 years, like starting a grass-fed organic dairy brand, is not easy. Like the supply chain is pretty complex. I mean, it's super short shelf life. You got to, you know, you pick up the milk from the farm. You got to deliver it in a day or two. You got in like whether you want it or not, you got to do something with it. It's tough. So like Tim Joseph, our founder, you know, and then those of us who've kind of came on and taken the brand in the next phase, it's incredible that we even got to where we are. It's just a very difficult place to compete in. But yeah, anyways, you know, like that's so with that, like a lot of it was just focusing on like, how do we make this work, right? And what's cool about this brand is we are out there convincing people to buy it. They're finding us, right? We're not spending hardly anything on marketing. We're going to start spending more soon here. But I it's something I've thought about from a business perspective. I think it's cool to work for somewhere that we're not selling some widget that people don't really need that, like, maybe it helps a little bit. No, like, this sells itself. So in what we... a lot of consumers are, you know, they're the tip of the spear. They're looking for what's the best of the best. And they find us a lot of times. So, and a lot of it's parents looking for the best for their kids, right? Our milk isn't cheap, right? With that, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the economic term. What is it? Externalities, right? So like a conventional egg, I'm not intentionally talking down about another form of agriculture, but like there's negative impacts on the economy or on other people in the environment. And ours, we don't have that. So part of the reason is that's why our milk costs so much, right? You know, when you're talking about a cow is producing a quarter to a third what a conventional cow is, it's going to cost more. So, but anyways, like I kind of got off topic there. But our, you know, the product sells itself. And I think now when we start to market more, we're going to try to get more people who are buying organic milk who maybe thought what they were getting was grass-fed. We're going to start going after them. So we also have, with the Climate Smart Commodities program, we have a lot of marketing funds to grow this market. So
awesome. Yeah, I mean, what you're selling are, you know, you're completely correct. It's just a few different products, and they're all, you know, staples that everybody's going to have in their house, or most people are going to have in their house. And so, you know, you're selling a commodity, essentially, something that generally speaking, there's not a lot of differentiating qualities, but you guys have really set yourselves apart. That's why you're able to market your products at a premium, and you've got, you know, all of this great story essentially to back it up. So that's really special. Speaking of commodities, what is the USDA partnership for smart? What is it? What is the acronym? Climate Smart Commodities. What is the USDA program that you guys are working on?
It's a mouthful. USDA's Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities. We just had a program. I'll talk about one second what it is, but we shot a video in partnership with the USDA last week. It was like ourselves, and we had a retailer we were partnered with in one of our farms. And as part of the video, we had to keep saying that, and everybody struggled with it as well. So you're not the only one. But yeah, I think I'm going to say it wrong. There's like it's a $3 billion government program. 100 and you know through the USDA, 140 people were selected. Jeez, it's time has flown. I think it was like 2.5 years ago though. The USDA announced like this, they were going to accept applications for it. And I saw it and some others saw it. And there's this, I mentioned Paul and Phyllis Van Amberg from Dharma Lee. They are, you know, really the first farm to join Tim. They've led all our education, foremost experts on grass-fed, all that. So in 2015, Phyllis had this idea. She's like, we want to pay farms for ecological outcomes, right? So we're going to pay them a high milk, a price to buy their milk, but if they can prove ecological outcomes, and ecological outcomes might be more soil, more biodiversity in the pasture, ground cover, all these different regenerative things, We're going to, you know, better cow body scores, healthier cows, all these things. We're going to pay them more money on top of their pay price for these ecological outcomes. Well, I talked about how a little bit ago how difficult it is to start up any dairy brand, much less a grass-fed organic dairy brand when nobody else is doing that. It just wasn't, right? We didn't have the funding to make it happen. We were trying to make the business work in general. So when this happened, Phyllis was like, hey, guys, we're looking at the requirements. And I'm like, we think we fit all of this. And we're going to use what Phyllis wanted to do in 2015. And we're going to adapt it to this Climate Smart Commodities program. So, I mean, to be honest, none of us knew anything about, I knew a lot about supply chain. We had people who knew a lot about finance and whatever. We knew a lot about business. We hired a grant writer, if anybody needs anybody, an awesome, awesome person on that front. And he came in and he helped us write this grant for the USDA's Commodities Program. We finally got the money. So essentially, Maple Hill is getting $20 million. These are rounded, but $13 million of that is going to go to producers. Okay. So that's going to be for implementing climate smart practices. Some of it's educating the producers on how to do these practices well. So that's like we host pasture walks all the time throughout the summer where we actually had, I think it was it Keith from your team, Gunnar?
Yep.
He attended one. It was great to see him there. And we just like, hey, here's how you implement these practices, or here's like what's going well in this pasture. Here's what you can do better. Here's how you can more effectively rotationally graze and all this stuff. And but anyways, a lot of it, most of it is incentive for that 13 million is incentives for producers. 2 million is kind of what we're working on with you guys, MMRV and administrative stuff. So, hey, we're doing this. We have to verify these practices that we're implementing on farms. Like, where was the carbon when we, like, were soil organic matter when we started? Or is it at the end? We have to go verify all that, and we have to prove that. We're working with a number of folks right now. We've got a number of bids, and we're hoping to very soon here roll out an LCA, full life cycle assessment of our complete network. So we can not just, the farmers aren't just incentivizing to do this. We're going to be able to have a lot of data behind what they're doing. And then lastly, Maple Hill is getting $5 million for marketing. So we're going to have farmers doing great things, right? Like a lot of climate smart practices. And honestly, Maple Hill Farms, a lot of them were doing all this. This is just now we're going even further. We're going to have a lot of data on what they're doing. And then lastly, we're going to have some money to go tell that story and use that data to tell a story to more people than we have before. And we're going to grow the market for this product. So, I can get into more detail of any of that if you'd like, but that at a high level is what
I'm curious about the marketing side. Is it marketing just to consumers, or are you marketing also to farms? I mean, you're recruiting farms to Maple Hill. That's kind of how you're increasing your scale. So, like, what does that side of the business look like? Like, do farms just come to you? Or are you going to look for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, the $5 million is like marketing consumers, and some of that's customers. Like, our customer would be like Walmart, and they're selling consumers. So it's just about like mainly consumers. But what you're saying is interesting, and it's where I like a lot of my team is spending time. So the best way to market to new farms is by your current farm saying good things about you, right? Like if Maple Hill, like we could go spend whatever we wanted to on marketing, but like to add new farms to the network or recruiting, it's more red ball. But it doesn't matter if our existing farms aren't happy. So we've done a lot over the years to put our farms in a better position. So first and foremost, they have to be saying good things about Maple Hill and this model. So next though, we advertise in publications like at times, and we're trying to get some more money to do more of this, but things like Country Folks is a thing a lot of farms in the Northeast read. I've recently found out there's this thing, publication called The Busy Beaver that a lot in the Plain community, so Amish folks, this Busy Beaver, we've started to do some stuff there. And just different, Graze is a grass-fed publication, not part of the Northeast Organic Dairy Producers Association. Like there's different things like that. We've also had some other ways of like getting addresses for all organic farms within certain regions and sending them mailers talking about Maple Hill. And then I'm actually going with our farm team next week. We're hosting a recruiting event outside of Lancaster in Gap, Pennsylvania, and another one in central Pennsylvania. So, I mean, we host events, and a lot of it, though, is just word of mouth, right? Like neighbors talking to neighbors, and We've been in New York forever. We just recently expanded into Pennsylvania. So New York, we don't do as much because people know us, right? We'll send stuff out. But yeah, we spend a lot of time on recruiting farms.
That's awesome. Yeah, I don't think you can ever discredit the value of word of mouth, especially in the agricultural industry. It's, you know, I was at the Sustainable Ranchers Tour in North Dakota a couple weeks ago, and they were asking what does it mean to have this partnership essentially? And I was like, it means everything. You know, without these partnerships, whether big or small, you know, you really don't have anything, because it's such a tight-knit community. And especially some of the types of growers that you are working with, they're, you know, especially tight-knit communities, and having that trust and those testimonials is incredibly valuable. Could you dive a little bit more into specifically how your growers are benefiting from this project?
Yeah, for sure. So a couple of our biggest things that we're paying for, and I talked about $13 million in incentives, I kind of just said regenerative climate smart practices. But a couple of the things are two biggest things. Are one is avoided conversion. So keep, and what that means is really just keeping hay and pasture land in hay and pasture, right? When you have perennial pasture lands, like land that's not being tilled, like that grass, I mean, if you have, you know, over 10 years, the roots keep getting longer. It's like almost as good as it gets in terms of regenerative agriculture. So convincing them, paying those farms to keep that land in sort of. And then the one that I'm most excited about is our pasture scoring. And it's really at the heart of paying farmers for ecological outcomes. So I keep coming back to them, but they're at the backbone of what we do. Paul and Phyllis Van Amberg at Darwin Lee, they have what's called the enhanced pastures, Darna Lee's enhanced pasture scoring thing. And you go and you score pastures on a score of 0 to 120, and there's 12 points. It's like based on plant biodiversity, animal biodiversity, ground cover. I think there's something that incorporates water infiltration, how quickly manure is decomposing. Like that's a good sign. There's all these things. But that's another big one. So we'll pay them. We'll score their pastures, and we'll say you scored a 60 out of 120. We're going to pay you based on your baseline score, but then we're going to pay people in future years based on improvement. So if they scored a 60 in year one, and in year two they score a 70, and year three they score a 80 or whatever, we're paying them for that improvement. So we're paying them based on improving these ecological outcomes. And that's something we're like very, very excited about. And this money that is going to these farms. So like I grew up in Ames, Iowa, Central Iowa. It's a college town with Iowa State University, and like surrounded by big ag, right? Corn and soy everywhere. And it's great. I mean, I grew up in an agricultural community. But a lot of those, like, you know, I knew growing up that a lot of these, like there is subsidies for a lot of these farms. And a lot of these are very large scale farms. There's nothing wrong with that. We need that to feed the country. But like small underserved farms like ours, they didn't get these opportunities, right? Like it's not as easily accessible for them. They don't have a farm manager or somebody on the business side to go apply for it. They're busy milking cows. So it's cool too on another front that we're able to get this money to our network so they can, you know, participate and get some benefits from some of these government programs as well. And they just happen to be climate smart and improve, you know, better for the environment as well. And a quick sidebar, one thing I think that's been really cool too is just like, there's 139 other people who got money, right? And it ranges like the full gamut. Big companies, small companies. Like we're kind of on the middle to small side, but there's some really small ones. And it's just really cool to see how many different people across the country are doing really cool things. We've met some great folks like, you know, Gunnar, like you and your team. We've been really excited to work with you guys and like learning about what you're doing. Like us verifying what our network is doing would never have been possible without this money. So it's been really cool to interact with a lot of just like-minded folks who are passionate about, you know, a better food system.
Definitely. Yeah, no, it's been a really good time. These projects are really, really cool. And Earth Optics is performing the MRV services on a few of these different projects. But the one that I've worked most closely on is with Maple Hill. And it's going to be great to exactly what you just said, you know, validate the outcomes that a lot of these growers are putting so much work into. And those results of course are going to help pay those growers themselves for directly for the outcomes that they've helped kind of steward on their land. But then also those results are, you know, an incredible marketing opportunity. If you're able to verify legitimately, this is how much carbon, for instance, we're sequestering on the land that we're producing this milk off. I mean, that's a you can't really get much better than that. So like what value is this data going to provide to Maple Hill, whether it be for their growers directly or for you as a company?
I think it'll provide a lot, right? Like we've always spent a lot of time just like what I would say is doing the right thing. We just haven't had the resources to talk about what we're doing, right? Or to verify it. Now we're going to have this data where it is going to be verified. We can put data behind everything we're saying. We're going to be able to tell it to a lot of people. So we're really excited about what that means. The other thing actually real quick that I'd say about the network too. So not only are we incentivizing these farms, sorry, I just get excited about this part. Like when the farmers are doing these practices, like when they're really leaning into regenerative practices and they're like incredible grazers and like working to get better, they're increasing the soil fertility on their land. And so, and they're getting paid to do that. But them doing that is going to result in increased soil fertility, which is going to mean their land is going to be more productive for years to come, right? So it's going to also pay them as it goes forward, which I think is like one of the coolest parts about this. So, the more people really lean into this and the more people come to our network, there's long-term benefits, and that's financial benefits as well.
Yeah, certainly.
I was going to say those financial benefits are critical on, these small family-run farms. Like, I think that is, I don't know, I don't own a small farm, but I feel like that's an uphill battle. Todd's shared a stat with us offline here that American dairy farms are down 95% since the 1970s. Have you heard that stat? Does that ring true?
All sorts of stats. None of them are good.
None of them are good. Yeah, so I think it's really amazing that you guys have been able to kind of grassroots grow this business. And as a consumer who was not marketed to and did just pick it up off the shelf, I think exactly what you said, like I didn't plan to be your target consumer on this call, but that I walked by and thought, oh yeah, this is what I'm looking for and this is what I want to get my kids. Like it's impressive and it says a lot about the quality of the brand.
I like that.
Now, Mitch, I want to bring up kind of a sensitive subject here, and I wanted to wait until the end because I wanted you to be in a good mood for at least the first, two-thirds of this episode or so. But one of the first things that we talked about a few or so, many months back, actually, when we first started talking about this project was the marketing component. And it's because there's a certain company out there that makes an alternative to milk that put out a marketing campaign that is very much against milk. Regardless of how that milk is produced. So, I think we all know the answer, but is grass-fed dairy, is it good for the planet? Is it bad for the planet? Are there alternatives that are better and why are they not as good?
I'm going to start by saying I'm not going to talk about any other problem. I have enough on my plate right now before I get in any trouble. But we think it is the best model out there. Right? Let me say, it covers every box, land, animals, farmers, and people, right? We think it hits on every one of like the pillars you could want it to. And, when you look at regenerative agriculture and what we're doing, I think I don't see that there's a better model out there. I really don't. I firmly believe that. Again, I'm not going to comment on what others are doing, but I am very, very confident in what we are doing and why it's the best model.
Yeah, to me, it's just it's time tested. I've drank milk and had dairy products my entire life, and my entire family has for 10,000 plus years. It's something where it's like, look, why reinvent the wheel? There's a right way to produce these time tested products. Let's just end the conversation there. But that's usually not.
Actually, and one other thing I would say too is, this is growing. It's growing like crazy. Like we are. Every year we put out an aggressive sales forecast, and every year we're like significantly behind. And not that we're running behind, but it's just like consumers are, I don't know what has shifted, especially in the last year. Consumers are very much interested. We're hearing anecdotally that like people are coming back from plant-based, right? So people were looking to plant-based because it's healthier or whatnot. And I'm not trying to say anything negative about that, but we are seeing folks that are saying, well, actually, maybe milk is best for me. And those folks who are thinking a lot about it are looking at it and like, oh, well, grass-fed is the best milk out there. And that's maybe part of the reason we're seeing it. I think my sales guy, this put me wrong. So take this with a grain of salt. But I think one of our sales guys told me the grass-fed category is up like 22 or 24% This was like through August over last year. And that's over, like, that's after a ton of growth. So, you know, the category and the segment, it's very much on trend right now.
Awesome. I love it. You know, I studied biology in school, and specifically evolutionary biology. And I used to get into a bunch of arguments with people at the college that I went to about milk and dairy and whatnot. And it was, you know, something I learned in one of these biology classes was there's certain populations of people who their DNA literally evolved to be able to digest milk throughout their entire life. Mm-hmm. You know, there's little pieces of our history and of our lives that a lot of people don't understand, but it's like, you know, some of us have literally evolved to be able to drink milk through adolescence into our lives. And so it's cool to see this kind of shift in culture, not shift in culture, but a shift in the way that people are talking about what they're putting into their bodies, because it's, you know, you can't engineer your way out of every solution or every problem. Sometimes you need to, you know, kind of turn the page back almost to take a step forward. And so it's really cool to see what you guys are doing and see how it's turning some people's heads.
That's awesome. I didn't know that you went to school for it. That's really, I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I could nerd out about ecology all day. Don't even get me started.
Gunnar, I try to tell my husband all the time that I am engineered genetically to live off Sour Patch Kids, but he's not buying it. I try. I've tried for years to explain that.
I haven't seen that study yet. I'll keep looking out for that study.
I can confirm my kids are not the same, but that's the right gasoline for me.
Well, Mitch, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on here today. Thank you again. Do you have any kind of last words for us?
No, just, you know, we've enjoyed working with you all so far. And, you know, we actually, one quick story, I asked, I think it was Orion or somebody on the Earth Optics team. I was like, hey, have you done the MMR meet? Have you gotten out on many pastures yet? And you're like, we've done all of them. We're like done except for one farm. And we appreciated Earth Optics, like, can do attitude or just get it done. So many folks just talk about things, but you guys really, your team really got out there, and we've been impressed so far. So no, we're excited to be working with you guys, and, you know, thanks for including me.
Of course. Yeah. I think Piper and I are both scrappy people who we know how to get the job done when it needs to get done. Awesome. Piper, I'm going to let you close it out today since I gave the intro.
All right. Thank you everyone for coming for another episode of Grounded. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, follow. What else? There's other things. Do them all and stay grounded.